speaking today with Houston City Controller Anise Parker, who is running for mayor this November. First question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Because I absolutely believe I'm the best qualified candidate in the city of Houston for this position, and I can make a difference.
All right, well, that's very straightforward. Let's talk about what you have done in your 12 years in city government. You were a city council member for 3 terms, and you are finishing your 3rd term as city controller. In all that time, what would you say are your 3 top accomplishments?
You know, there's a range of accomplishments, and they're very different in the 2 positions. Let's start with the most recent, which is controller. I have been able to transform the relationship between the controller's office and the mayor's office. I have been able to professionalize the controller's office. We're no longer viewed as making decisions based on politics. We are a professional controller's office, and we do our job at a high level. I've also been able to, because of the performance audit authority within the controller's office, conduct audits that have identified millions of dollars in savings, money that's now being reprogrammed back into parks and libraries and police and the things that we care about. So I've found efficiencies, and I've transformed the view of the office. As a council member, I came in to work on quality of life issues. The 2 tools that neighborhoods have to prevent unwanted development, minimum lot size, minimum building ordinance, or minimum building lot ordinance, those were my babies when I created on council. But I had my hands in smoking ordinance, historic preservation ordinance. I generated and passed the pooper scooper ordinance in the city of Houston. I changed the sound ordinance in the city of Houston. And as an aside, one of my frustrations is that we made the sound ordinance easier to enforce, and the police department is still not enforcing it. I did the first draft of a valet parking ordinance in the city of Houston. I came in with a huge list of things I wanted to accomplish as a council member. One of the reasons I came in with that long agenda is that I came out of the civic clubs. I came out of neighborhood organizing. I knew what citizens were most interested in having happen.
All right. Well, let's go back to the first thing on that list, which was the professionalization of the controller's office. It was a ballot referendum of a couple of years ago that allowed for more autonomy with the controller's office. Since I think the controller's office tends to be more overlooked than some other offices in Houston, just doesn't get the attention that the mayor's office does, certainly, and to an extent that council does.
I have no vote, and if I can't vote on your project, your deal, you may not pay as much attention to me.
But talk to us. You know, what specifically was that referendum designed to accomplish, and how has it met its goal or not?
Controller's office in Houston is a very unique position. Only the big cities in America have elected controllers because the largest cities in America have strong mayor systems. There is only one other elected controller in the entire state of Texas, and that is the state comptroller. So it's like a different branch of government with strictly dealing with finances. The last outsider in the controller's office was Kathy Whitmire. Everybody else has come from within city government since then. And the last CPA in the controller's office was Kathy Whitmire. It became a political position, and it was used for political purposes. I came in saying, we are going to focus on what the charter says we can do. Well, one of the problems is that the charter language for the controller's office is decades old. It's actually the turn of the last century. And a lot of what a modern accounting office does was not covered. So I took a referendum to the voters to establish once and for all that we had complete audit authority within the city. And what had happened prior to that was we had just discovered the problems in the crime lab. And I can't guarantee that my predecessors would have discovered the problems over there, but 3 successive controllers had tried to audit the property room of the police department, which is where none of these problems were discovered, and then turned away by the mayor, who said, charter doesn't say you can do that. You can go do financial audits. You can go do inventory audits. That's a management prerogative. Go away. and that's no longer acceptable. This is a $4 billion corporation, 21,000 employees, depending on how you count it, 21 city departments. There needs to be somebody who can go in and turn over rocks and find problems. And we were able to go to the voters and get that permission. Having said that, I have tried to use it judiciously because I truly want to institutionalize these the prerogatives of the controller's office to audit and how that data is presented. One of the things that I told the mayor from the very first day in office was that you will not read my opinion on something in the daily paper. I will tell you. You will not hear about an audit first. When you receive a press release, we'll tell you what the findings are. So this is not a gotcha. You may not like our findings, but we will deal with you professionally. And his response back was that he wouldn't try to hide the ball from me on financial issues. And we have both kept that promise. Now, we don't always agree with each other, and we go through little periods where we don't talk to each other, but we deal with each other professionally.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about professionalizing versus making it more of a political office. I think one criticism people might have of you and your term as controller is that you didn't maybe butt heads with Mayor White more often. I'm going with that is, I mean, the city of Houston has a very strong mayor, and some people, I think, view the controller's office as perhaps a check on the mayor's power. What's your view on that, and perhaps how would you like the next controller to deal with the Mayor Parker?
I've heard the criticism, and I respect and understand it. But it's very clear that the job of the controller is to look out for the financial best interests of the city. It's easier to be a controller when you have a strong administrator in the mayor's office, when the person in the mayor's office is willing to give you access to the financial data, and when the economy is going in the right direction. So for the first 4 years that he and I were in office together, all of those things were happening, and I was able to affect change early on. And if I could see problems developing, I could go to the administration and we could deal with it. So it didn't have to rise to the level of a public fight. If I thought for a second the mayor was doing something illegal, improper, dangerous to the city of Houston, I'd be out there beating the drum on it. And I have been quite willing to weigh in on issues on the opposite side of the mayor. The use of pension obligation bonds to balance our budget the first couple of years in office. The direct quote for me that was in the Houston Chronicle, and I said it to council, if you use these pension obligations bonds, it is legal to do, and it may be appropriate to do, but it is the financial equivalent of paying your house note on a credit card. I don't know how much more blunt I can be, but once the data is presented to council, another example, the Hilton America's hotel transaction, when the mayor put the beneficial interest in the hotel over to the pension system to not have to put money into the pension system. So it was a accounting sleight of hand is what I called it. But I wrote a detailed analysis to council on how the transaction was going to work so that they had the information when they made the policy decision. My job is to make sure that they don't take the city off a cliff and that they have the information they need to make the policy decisions. I don't see my job as disagreeing with them once that policy decision has made. And I would hope to have a controller with that same approach.
Okay. Well, obviously, let's continue the theme of the city's finances. You recently said that the city has a budget deficit of $103 million, and Mayor White disagreed with that figure, and depending on how you looked at it, he cited either a figure of $25 million or, I believe, $92 million. What is the source of that dispute? And
we were talking about two different numbers. And the first thing the mayor's spokesperson said, "Well, her numbers are just wrong." And then the mayor said, "Oh, it's only the $25 million." And by the time that was like a Sunday, and by the time we got to Wednesday, The mayor was thanking me at the council table for my professional attitude and working on this issue. We're talking about two different numbers. First of all, I do independent revenue estimates. The mayor does his own revenue estimates. There's an old joke, you want the one-arm economist because the economist says, you know, on the other hand, it's this. If you have two economists in the room, you can have 10 different outcomes of do the analysis. We're looking at dozens of different revenue streams, so is he. We come to the end. Our numbers never going to be the same. When the budget was passed in June to begin the July 1st fiscal year, we said, hey, our revenue estimates are lower than yours. We think that you're going to have to fill about a $40 million gap. But these are estimates. I'm not ready to certify the budget yet. But we think you're going to have to come back and find another $40 million. We said that to council in writing. It's up on my website, our analysis. And council went ahead and passed the budget. The mayor's budget showed an operating deficit, and council balanced the budget by drawing down reserves. The way I have presented the budget numbers for actually all last fiscal year, too, where the council balanced the budget. We've had an operating deficit for several years. And I'm going to go on a segue here. People say we don't have a balanced budget. We do have a balanced budget, but we have an operating deficit, meaning we're spending more than we're taking in. So we balance the budget by hitting our savings account. Individuals all over America are doing that right now. Economic downturn, they're hitting their savings account. Problem is, you can only do that so long, and you need to recognize that you're hitting your savings account. So the way I've been presenting the budget numbers for at least the last 18 months is we have an operating deficit of X, and it includes the amount you've drawn from savings to balance the budget. So when I said we had a $103 million shortfall, what the mayor's numbers were a $91 million shortfall. Not that far apart in a $1.8 billion general fund budget. But what the mayor chooses to focus on is not the total shortfall. He only wants to talk about how much of a gap we have left to close that we haven't balanced with savings. And so I say 103 operating deficit, and the mayor says, oh, but we only have a $10 million gap left to close, or a $25 million gap left to close. He's talking about a smaller piece of my big number. And it's apples and oranges. And I'd say it's like the mayor wants to argue about whether the glass is half full or half empty. All I want to say is the level of water in the glass is going down. Council needs to be aware of it and of the magnitude of the problem. It was 2 weeks ago, when I presented the financials to council. I go to council on the first Wednesday of every month for the financials. Revenue has declined again. And council and the public says, we just passed the budget. How could you be wrong? We're not wrong. We made an estimate based on the best financial data available at that time. Each month we get a new analysis from the state. We get new numbers from Harris County, and we go back to the drawing board, and we try to keep it as close as possible. So you don't know this yet, but the city's going to have to go back and cut some more.
Well, you mentioned that, and if the problem is that revenue is declining, why aren't we focusing on more revenue? It seems to me that one of the things we've been doing over the past few years is cutting the cutting the property tax rate.
Marginally, but yes. 5 years running.
And, you know, call me crazy, but that's probably prevented some money from coming into the coffers.
Yes.
So my first question is specifically, what are we doing to deal with the revenue side of this? Because all I hear about is cutting costs. And secondly, and I've asked both of your opponents about this, and I've asked everybody about this, and I don't always get what I think is a satisfactory answer. How do we intend to pay for the extra things that we want to do? I'm specifically talking about more police officers.
I have a detailed answer to that one, but let's go back to the more basic question. If your intention has always been to run statewide in the state of Texas, would you rather run as someone who has cut property taxes every year you are in office? Or would you want to run as the tax and spend guy? And the city has made a point of rolling back the tax rate marginally or keeping it flat. I mean, it was flat this year, and that it was that's a pure and simple a political philosophical statement that they're making. And yes, there's less money coming in because of that. But there's another issue at play here as well, and that is our revenue limitation. You know, remember rev cap and tax cap. Rev cap was a limitation on the total amount of revenue the city could take in per annum. Tax cap was a limitation on the amount of tax income the city could take in per annum. We've been litigating rev cap, and I believe it has gone away. But we still have tax cap. And so we're not allowed to bring in more tax revenue than the combination of inflation and population increase, or 4.5% increase, whichever is less. And so we've been bumping up against that tax limitation, too. So, you know,
We've handcuffed ourselves.
It would be great. I mean, we've made marginal cuts, but it wasn't necessarily to stay under that limitation. But we were pretty close to it anyway. So it's not as if we'd kept the tax rate flat, or that we would have been able to bring in huge amounts more money.
All right. Well, let me press the other point, which is that...
And we cannot take in more money than that without going back to the voters.
Okay. Then, given that, you know, people do apparently want more... And let me specifically address it to the matter of police officers. Public safety is the biggest part of the city's budget. A big part of that expense is salaries and pension, which, needless to say, is a function of how many officers you have. How do you bring in more police officers, and how do you pay for them?
I believe the personnel costs in the police department are about 80%, but citywide, they're about, 73-74%. We're a service organization, which is just like any other city in America. We are a service organization. We provide services, and most of those services are provided by people. And it's very difficult to trim the costs in a service organization without impacting people's jobs. So, you know, let's put it in the larger context. The police department is one-third of the city's budget by itself, and the bulk of that is in salaries, and yet we don't have enough officers on the street as it is. We have given significant pay raises to the police department. Actually started under the Brown administration before White came in. But the police budget has grown, I believe, 40% over the last 5 years. Pretty much every bit of new money coming into the city has been funneled into the police department. I don't see that we are appreciably safer after that huge infusion of cash into the police department. So if shoveling money at the police department is not the answer, what is the answer? Right? Let's rethink how we do policing. Number one, we have dozens of police agencies in the greater Houston area, from the sheriff's department to the constables to Metro to the ISD police to the university police, and each university has their own, to the smaller cities. If someone is threatening you, you want an officer with a badge and a gun. You don't care what uniform they wear. Let's figure out a way to immediately increase the number of police officers that we have access to by creating a protocol of coordinated response. So all of these TCLOSE certified officers are available to help each of us. There's one. Now, there's some things, logistical hurdles. You have to have an interoperable radio system so they can talk to each other. Working in that, major investment in that has been made. You have to have the protocols in place so that you can keep them safe. That's still to come. But immediately put more officers on the street. Let's talk about cadet classes. Every time we pass the budget, council members complain that there are not enough cadet classes. We know we're not putting enough officers out there. We're barely staying up with attrition. Put more cadet classes in the budget. and they throw more cadet classes in every year. We have not been able to fill the cadet classes we have. Through last year, we were paying a $12,000 signing bonus for new police officers. $12,000. Couldn't fill the cadet classes. Interesting thing happened in the last year. We just dropped that signing bonus out of the budget. Money's gone back into the other activities in the police department because the economy collapsed and our troops are finally beginning to come home from overseas war service. Single biggest source of new police officers anywhere in the country, ex-military, and with the economic changes, they're more interested in law enforcement careers. Suddenly we have people knocking on our doors wanting to come in. Well, is there a way to move those officers into out onto the streets faster? We have we have insisted that first-time officers or new police officers have to go through our six-month cadet academy. Is there a better, cheaper way to do it? The University of Houston downtown has a criminal justice program. HCC trains police officers for Metro. I believe they're going to be doing training for Harris County, for other agencies. You come out of that HCC program with a state T-Close certification, same as you would out of the Houston Police Academy. You pay your own way to do that. I get that maybe we want to put our stamp on those officers. We want to mold them our way. So however long it takes, you tell me, is it a month? Is it 3 weeks? Whatever it does to make them Houston police officers instead of general, generic peace officers in the state of Texas. Get them out on the street. Saves us a tremendous amount of money, moves them out faster, leverages our resources. It's about thinking about how you do it differently. And we've been unwilling to do that.
Okay. Recently in the news was the story about Harris County possibly facing some unexpected financial obligations related to the financing of the stadiums. They have some issues with
one stadium, their stadium, not ours.
Reliance Stadium. Issue with their bond insurer. You were on council at the time that all these deals were approved. A, any regrets? And B, given that the city is in negotiations with the county to make some financing available to the Dynamo to build a stadium there, are any concerns about that?
Excellent question. Citizens don't understand that each of the stadiums that were built had completely different financing arrangements. And yes, I was on council when we created the Sports Authority, and I voted for the financing arrangement for Minute Maid Park and for Toyota Center, where the city has a role. There was a completely separate financing arrangement for the Reliant Complex. That is a wholly owned county facility. It's having nothing to do with the city of Houston, and I did not vote on that. Now, one of my opponents puts on his website that he was the legal authority for the Sports Authority and helped negotiate these financial arrangements, and I would trust that he knew that there was a poison pill in there, because we were all being told, and there are minutes of the council meetings where I was on council where we dealt with the Sports Authority, that there would never be a financial call on the taxpayers, that there was a financing mechanism that was in place. I don't know what the county commissioners were told when they voted on the Reliant piece, but I do know that for the city, we were promised that, and the city's stadium deals have been going fine. Dynamo is a slightly different, the Dynamo Stadium is a slightly different animal, and this would be the first time both the city and the county are being asked to participate again. We have two, they have one. This would be a joint with the Dynamo ownership team. City's already made the investment. Mayor and council voted last year to purchase the land. City's already got skin in the game. That's That happened long before I'll be in the mayor's office. Once I'm in the mayor's office, my responsibility is to make sure that we maximize that investment. And if the county, for whatever reason, decides not to pony up, I'm going to have to analyze whether we want to allow the Dynamo to proceed, because I'm not interested in putting any more money into the game, or whether we take this investment we've made in six square blocks of East Downtown and take them back out to the marketplace and try to turn a profit on it.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Metro. You've been critical of them of late. Talk to me a little bit about...
Of late. I've been critical of them for a long time. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I've noticed it more of late.
Even going to Canada for them.
That too. But talk to me a little bit about what you see as, you know, well, why you are critical of Metro and what the problems are. And, you know, given that if you're elected, you would be in office for perhaps 6 years, you know, where you would like Metro
to be 6 years
from now. I would
appoint the majority of the Metro board members. Mayor of Houston has huge influence over the direction of Metro. And I really think we need to go back to the drawing board. A couple of problems. I was on council when we pushed through the light rail. I support light rail today. I support it as a council member, voted for it. We had a council member sue us as we tried to push this forward. And Shirley DeLibro, for good or not, I mean, she had a strong personality and there were a lot of detractors, but she got it on the ground and she moved it forward, and we have that first segment. Nothing has happened in 6 years. We squandered every opportunity we had. And at the same time, we have, in my opinion, dismantled what was a pretty good bus system. A mass transit system is by definition first and foremost for those people who need transportation and have no other recourse. It therefore must have a really first-class bus system. And Metro, in cutting corners and shaving costs, has been cannibalizing the bus system to feed the ridership on the light rail line. And yeah, I know they say, oh, well, this is a lightly used line and we're cutting back over here. I want them to refocus on, we're about transit for the most number of people, transit for the masses. Let's figure out how to do that, and that is a great bus system that feeds a light rail line that will also be fed with commuter rail and park and ride. We have let the commuter rail issue completely languish, and finally, the county has turned its attention to commuter rail and has begun to make explorations on the 290 corridor. We need to be a part of that. We need to scramble and catch up. We just need to get it. We need to get it done. I have. And then finally, do you know how much money Metro is spending? Do you have any confidence in the numbers that they give you? They are not transparent. They're not accountable to the neighborhoods that they trample through as they're laying out their light rail lines, nor are they accountable to the taxpayers in terms of clear access to their books and financial records. I believe that citizens will pay for the government that they need. They have to trust that you will always tell them the truth about what it's going to cost and what its impact is going to be on them. Metro does none of the above.
You have been, in your time in government and before, an advocate for neighborhoods, for neighborhood preservation and protection, and yet you also just recently received a co-endorsement from Houstonians for Responsible Growth, which I at least think of as a, you know, developer bulldozer kind of group. Maybe my perception is wrong, but, you know,
I think your perception is a little off, but I also think you ought to think a little bit about, you know, Nixon could go to China. I have unquestioned neighborhood credentials. I was president of one of the largest civic associations in Houston. I led the charge against the march of the townhomes through the neighborhoods. I talked about the minimum lot size and the minimum building line ordinance. We had a huge fight on what the proper density number should be in Chapter 42 inside the loop. I got hugely crossways with Bob Perry during that time, and I referred to him in a media article as the Darth Vader of neighborhoods, and he has pumped tens of thousands of dollars into my opponent's campaigns against me. So I'm not afraid of talking about the problems, but isn't it better to work with organizations that are willing to focus on solutions? Houstonians for Responsible Growth, they're not the builders who are with one of my opponents. They're an organization trying to figure out how to keep, you know, the free market movement of development in Houston, but still protect neighborhoods. And they made an absolute commitment to me to work with me to protect intact residential neighborhoods, to finally create the deed restriction database that we have been begging the city for more than a decade, to create a system of reinstituting deed restrictions in those intact neighborhoods so that we don't just leave it to the neighborhoods to protect themselves, to be able to go out proactively and say, let's create the database, we know exactly where the problems are. I would venture to say that the folks in Southampton around the Ashby high-rise who lived next to that apartment complex for years in their deed-restricted homes had no clue that there was an unrestricted reserve in the middle of a neighborhood. You know, forewarned is forearmed. First and foremost, we have the ability, with the help of Houstonians for Responsible Growth, to get the information out there so everybody has, it's an even playing field, everybody knows what cards are on the table, and then we start ring-fencing our residential neighborhoods and putting the protections in place that we need to. And what they said to me in our screenings, and what I try to convey to, and actually in all the groups that I meet with, they want a partner in City Hall who will tell them the truth and who will make sure that they are at the table as a stakeholder when decisions are made. And that is an easy promise to make.
Okay. Do you believe that the changes council recently made to Chapter 42 will have an impact, a positive impact, on neighborhoods and, you know, things like, you know, the impact of density on infrastructure, walkability? I mean, what's your assessment of the changes to Chapter 42?
The changes to Chapter 42, I'm assuming you're talking about the transit corridor changes. I don't think they're going to have a huge impact. They're not really a lot of carrots nor a lot of sticks. If the city were truly interested in determining the kind of development that would go on in the transit corridors, the city would step in and control it. And I mean that by not the private sector development, but to say, if you want 6-foot sidewalks, the city, metro, there's a use for the general mobility funds. We go in and we put the sidewalks in. If you want, you know, we would not a heavy hand of regulation, but an investment that would help guide the kind of development we want. Kind of a side discussion, would you have predicted 6 years ago that the hottest entertainment corridor in the city of Houston would be Washington Avenue?
Probably not.
No one else would have. I would have bought land over there. I don't know about you, but that would have been a great idea. We are always playing catch-up. We could do such a better job of planning in the city of Houston. Part of that is knowing what's there. Part of that is, instead of viewing industry groups as the enemy, viewing industry groups as a partner in staying ahead of growth in the city of Houston and an asset to planning for these kind of changes. You know, as those properties on Washington started changing hands and the restaurants started going in, we should have been paying attention. The private sector could have helped us with that. We could have said, okay, this is coming down the road at us. What do we need over there? Well, I can tell you what we need over there. Right now, the biggest problem we have is parking, number one. And number two, A lot of these new properties are going in, or new nightclubs and restaurants are going in, and they back up on high-end townhomes and condominiums that are going in at the same time. There's always friction at that interspace between the two. Do we have the ordinance in place to deal with them? No. As these properties, these commercial properties are being built, we need to get a handle on outdoor patios. We need to get a handle on how our sound ordinance is being impacted. We need to say, okay, you know what? They're building these residential areas around, you know, at the same time they're building these clubs. And I'm not talking about areas where there's already residences, but where the things are going in at the same time. Let's work with these property owners on the commercial side. You know, you need a double wall, you know, double sound doors, so that we don't have those complaints. Let's figure out if the city has property in the area that we can turn into parking. Let's figure out if there's a way to put some of these property owners together, and we're truly talking about these, you know, walkable corridors. What do they need? What is the city's proper role? And it will be different in every area. And I don't know, you know, I don't have a magic answer, but let's just not say, okay, we're the city, we're only going to do these things, and we're going to wait until a problem comes and knock on our door. Let's say we're the city, we're responsible for providing services for 2.2 million Houstonians and a few million more that are going to be coming through the city every day. Let's look at where things are happening and what are the needs, and let's try to plan for them. And we're going to have to do it with working with the business community.
How do you assess Mayor White's term in office, and how do you think you would be like him or not like him as mayor?
He's a very strong administrator. He's a smart, able guy. He reads the public sentiment very well, and has managed to keep his popularity ratings up, I think, by trying not to stray too far from it. I believe that I am a much more collaborative leader. I would much rather have all the stakeholders in the meeting at the beginning. An example of that is the Safe Clear program, where I don't know whether we're on our sixth or our eighth iteration of Safe Clear, but that was a great project, great idea, support it completely. The first rollout, do you remember what it was? It was, I don't know, what it was, $75 to get towed off the freeway. And the three people he talked to before he rolled it out, and I don't know actually how many he did, but it was a small insular group. There's not anybody in there who apparently could conceive that there'd be people driving around the streets of Houston who don't have a credit card or don't have $75 in cash. And after we confiscated a couple of folks' cars because they couldn't pay for the tow, wait a minute, we need to think about this. And then it's, well, where do you take the vehicles? And how do you divide up the freeway segments? And you don't want to get bogged down in process, because I've been there. I was served under the Brown administration. And that was just very burdensome, because we often got lost in the process. But I think sometimes White goes too far in the other direction, which is he goes in thinking he has the answer, he rolls it out there, and then he wants to fix it on the fly. And so much of what government does has an impact on people's lives that there's a middle course. I have two examples of the way I deal with stuff like that. One, Mayor asked me 2 years ago to co-chair a committee on, or a task force, rather, on how we pick up trash in the city of Houston. We were having, you may recall, we were having problems where we had all of these condominium complexes, townhome complexes with private streets. Some of them we were picking up on private streets, others we weren't. We had sponsorship agreements in some areas where we would pay neighborhoods to pick up their own trash, and in other very similar areas that we weren't completely, there was no rational basis for the way we were doing it. And in addition, he asked us to look at recycling and heavy trash. And we brought all the stakeholders together. We crafted a compromise in really a relatively within 6 months, we were able to come up with a solution to a problem that had been festering for 20 years. And got buy-in from the neighborhoods, got buy-in from the townhome complexes. There was a minor change made to at the council table to what we proposed. We also proposed a complete change in the way we do heavy trash pickup and the way we do recycling. And you're seeing, you may or may not have the big green rolling cart yet. Single stream recycling.
Waiting for them.
Made a huge impact. It triples the recycling rate when those bins get out there. The next step of it, though, is we've got to do it on a weekly basis because recycling has to be such an ingrained habit that people are constantly doing it. But we said at the time, 70% of our solid waste stream, heavy trash, not solid waste, 70% of our heavy trash is clean organics. It's tree limbs. We don't want to send that to the landfill. We've got to figure out a way to recycle it. We did calculations. We did a lot of research. We figured that we could pick up nothing curbside except these clean organics and do an on-call service for the couches and the washing machines and the construction debris where you get two free. You call us within 48 hours. We get out and we pick it up from in front of your house. And we would consider that a much heightened level of service. And the mayor wasn't, for whatever reason, wasn't quite ready to go there. But the fact that we were able to bring so many disparate groups together, get a solution, and get all but one piece of it, which is a radical rethinking of how we did heavy trash out, was phenomenal. One of my proudest achievements as city controller is something I call Bank on Houston. After Katrina, I discovered that about 80% of the folks who were evacuees had no mainstream banking relationship. What that means to the folks who may be listening to this interview is that we scattered those Katrina evacuees all over the country. They have no mainstream banking relationship. Many of them were elderly, on kids, Social Security checks, child support checks, disability checks, stacked up in the New Orleans post office. No way to get them to those folks. No direct deposits, no banking relationship. It took months to link people to their money, and these were people who desperately needed it. Well, it couldn't happen in Houston. So the planning department did some analysis, and in some neighborhoods of Houston, as many as 50% of the folks have no mainstream banking relationship. Now, what that means for them is that they're going to check cashing places and paying much higher fees. They're going to payday lenders, which is a ticket to poverty. They're walking around with cash on payday, which makes them targets for crime. You don't build up savings. You don't build up credit. How do you deal with the problem? Well, you don't create another government program. I pulled together the banks and the credit unions in Houston. We got buy-in from virtually every bank and credit union. Brought the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, and said, we want you, banks and credit unions, to do what you do best. All we ask is that we come with a common marketing plan and a common platform and a major emphasis on financial literacy. Let's create a Bank on Houston bank account that has no minimum balance, that some of you at least have to have no fee, and we're not going to make you do what you don't want to do, but we're going to make you play nicely with all of the other banks, and we're going to go out and we're going to find these folks, and we're going to help bring them into the system. And our goal was 10,000 new accounts in a year. We had 10,000 new accounts, first-time bank accounts, in the first quarter. There's a real hunger out there for people who want to have access to this. Now, a somewhat controversial aspect of it was that you don't have to be a U.S. citizen to have a bank account in the United States. You just have to have proper ID. I mean, we do business with people all over the world. And so we had to convince these local banks and credit unions to accept the Mexican matricula card. And a lot of those new accounts were foreign nationals. Here, legally or illegally, that's not our issue. It's how can we improve our quality of life, their quality of life, make our community safer, and keep more money circulating in the economy. cut me off if I start to ramble. You know, I do that all the time. That's my one of my failings.
Just to wrap this up, when people come to vote in this election, why should they vote for you and not one of your opponents?
I'm the only candidate in this race ready to lead from the first day in office. I'm the only candidate in this race who truly understands the finances of the city of Houston, the impacts on the budget of various policy positions, and the stress points that we're going to have to face. And I am the only candidate in this race that has a track record of providing direct solutions to complex city problems. I know I can make a difference in the mayor's office.
All right. Anise Parker, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.